Hello, this is Alton Banks from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And we begin reading this week's Triangle Business Journal, as usual, with a look at the biz page. And we begin with an article under the heading of Aftermath, and it's entitled, Durham Businesses Look for a Boost After a Deadly Blast. Leaders of the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce are urging people to keep the downtown businesses in mind after a deadly blast April the 11th. Caroline Welch, the president and general manager of ABC 11 and the chamber's board chair, noted in an email blast that many businesses are still open and could use some friendly faces during this trying time. Jacqueline Morgan, who owns Morgan Imports, tells Biz the shop, located one block from the blast, definitely saw a slowdown. Morgan Imports has between 100 and 150 paying customers on a given day and saw that drop by 70% in the days after the blast. Morgan says the fallout has been emotional because the people at the downtown businesses all know each other and are connected. But the blast definitely had a financial impact, coming in key shopping days before Easter. Visitors to the store are definitely back on the rise, but Morgan notes it's not back to normal levels, in part because a large parking lot nearby remains closed. And under the heading of growing comes the article, Beehives Coming to Three More Triangle Locations. A buzzy Durham startup is about to be even more visible. Bee Downtown already has more than 150 hives installed at more than 50 local companies' campuses and is about to be in three more. The company announced Palmer RTP, RTI International, and Appalachian Mountain Brewing will bring bees to their operations. Bee Downtown will install and maintain beehives on their campuses and provide year-round employee engagement. Bee Downtown was founded by fourth-generation beekeeper Lee Catherine Bonner. And under the heading of sports business comes the article, Playoff Games at Home Start to Add Dollars to Kane's Bottom Line. The Carolina Hurricanes finally ended their playoff drought this season, and thanks to a thrilling first round, the team is looking to say goodbye to moribund regular season crowds as well. When Don Waddell joined the team as president 5 seasons ago, season ticket sales were at an all-time low of 5,200. That's risen to 7,500 this season, and Waddell says could reach 10,000 for next season as interest in the team spikes. He adds revenue from ancillary sources such as parking and concessions are also on the rise. Waddell said that last year at this time, the franchise had done $400,000 in new business for ticket sales. Right now, that number is $2 million. And that's a result of the Canes overhauling their roster and fielding a younger, more ferocious team. Now, all of a sudden, people are seeing that what we've been talking about is a reality, Waddell says. Also on the biz page under the heading of Big Gift comes the article, Duke Gets More Money from the Duke Endowment. It's always great to have a rich uncle, and when it comes to Duke University, James B. Duke just keeps on giving. The Duke Endowment, based out of Charlotte, is giving the school $4 million to hire faculty with global perspectives. The goal is to hire up to 6 scholars with expertise in African, Asian American, and Latinx studies. Our students observe that while there is much opportunity for the study of culture at Duke, some perspectives are largely absent or not presented in terms of their deep interconnectedness with other parts of the world, says Valerie Ashby, Dean of the Trinity College of Arts and Sciences at Duke. The new hires could be teaching as soon as fall 2020. The Duke Endowment was founded by James B. Duke in 1924, and while not officially connected to the school, has always been a vital funder for the university. And under the heading of weather comes the article, Time to Hunker Down, Hurricane Season Nears. North Carolina felt its fair share of hurricanes last year, and this year is shaping up to be the same. Leon Gee, professor of marine, earth, and atmospheric sciences at NC State University, says the 2019 hurricane season is expected to produce 13 to 16 named storms in the Atlantic. Of those, 5 to 7 could become hurricanes with 2 to 3 become major hurricanes. That number is slightly higher than the long-term average, that's the 1950 to 2018 average, of 11 named storms, but in line with the recent average of 14, and that recent period is 1995 to 2018. Xi's analysis relies on historical data on Atlantic Ocean hurricane positions and intensity, as well as other variables, including weather patterns and sea surface temperatures, to predict how many storms will form. Finally, from the biz page under the heading of Coming for Sale comes the article, Estate on Prime Raleigh Street to be Sold at Auction. A large estate on one of Raleigh's premier streets and connected to one of the city's best-known families has been padlocked and is scheduled to be auctioned this summer. The property at 2529 White Oak Road includes 2.97 acres and a 3,446-square-foot home built in 1938. The property has a tax value of $2.16 million. The home was owned by Celeste Gold Broughton until recently, when it was taken over by the court. She graduated from Vassar and married Robert Bain Broughton in 1964. He was the son of the late J. Melville Broughton, governor from 1941 to 45, and a U.S. senator who died in office in 1949. According to court documents, the couple separated in 1968. A 2003 North Carolina Court of Appeals ruling notes, since that time, they've been involved in litigation. The White Oak Road property has a lengthy history in the courts. On December 15, 2017, U.S. District Judge Martin Ridinger approved the trustee's right to sell the land and noted debts to the Wake County Revenue Department, Wells Fargo, Citibank, and others that totaled nearly $1 million. Then on January 25th, Ridinger ordered U.S. Marshals to seize the property because the debtor failed to vacate the premises. The property now appears headed toward an auction. Walter Henson Jr. of Wilson, the trustee, says, at the moment, and it's subject to change, it appears we'll have an auction in late summer in 90 days to 4 months. He says he has already had interest from investors who could keep the property as one lot or divide it into 2 or 3 lots. The area is zoned R2. This is unusual to have a parcel of property that is this desirable in one of Raleigh's most beautiful neighborhoods, Henson says. He expects the auction to be held in a room at the old post office on Fayetteville Street in Raleigh. Bring your checkbook, Henson says. Next, we turn to the Banking Tech EcoDevo page. And under the heading of New Hires comes the article, Former Square One Bankers Make Impact at Signature. Signature Bank of New York CEO Joseph DiPaolo says the bank's new venture banking group, which includes 10 former Square One bankers in Durham, is already producing, with several hundreds of millions, both on the deposit and loan side, in the pipeline. We know they got their first term sheet out the other day, which is extraordinary, because they literally just came on at the end of March, and they're trying to get to know their whereabouts here within the institution, he said on a recent earnings call. Not only do they have experience and knowledge, but they actually started Square One, took it public, and then sold it. So they know what it is to run a business on their own. He tells analysts to expect the team, which includes Triangle entrepreneurial veterans such as Zach Mansfield and Dhruv Patel, to hit the ground running for the second quarter. And under the heading of Stock Sales comes the article, Executives Exercise Options in Hot Stock Market. Top executives in the Triangle walked away with millions of dollars in insider stock sales in the first quarter of 2019. And the big winners included execs at the newly public Bandwidth, such as CEO David Morken, who through multiple stock option exercises sold shares worth nearly $12 million. The largest individual stock seller in the quarter is a familiar name on the list, Ikvia's John Connaughton. Connaughton, co-managing partner at Bain Capital and a director at Ikvia, sold shares valued at $122.3 million on March 12. And if history is any indication, more sell-offs could be coming. and 2018, Connaughton Inc. share sales worth more than $243 million altogether. And in 2017, he closed on stock sales worth nearly $389 million. Connaughton had been on Quintiles' board of directors since 2008, long before the mega merger that created ICFIA closed in 2016, and he was among the biggest beneficiaries of that deal. Here are the Triangle's top five individual stock sales in the quarter. March 12th, John Connaughton, director, sold ICFIA shares valued at more than $122.3 million. March 27, Ari Boosbeeb, CEO, exercised in-the-money securities in an ICFIA stock deal worth more than $13.5 million. And earlier, February 19th, the same gentleman exercised in-the-money securities in an ICFIA stock deal worth more than $13.4 million. On January the 9th, David Morkin, CEO, exercised a derivative in a Bandwidth stock deal valued at more than $4.5 million. And last but not least, February 11th, Michael Cunningham, Executive Vice President and General Counsel, sold Red Hat shares worth nearly $4.5 million. And under the heading of Funding Haul comes the article, Amid HQ Move to the Triangle, Firm Raises $70 Million. As it prepares to create hundreds of jobs at a new Triangle headquarters, a manufacturing company that counts Nike, Motorola, and Dell as clients has closed on $70 million in new financing. The round, announced April 23rd, brings HZO's total capital haul to $225 million, according to the company. HZO announced last month that it would be moving its headquarters from Salt Lake City to Marshall. And the round, comprised of $40 million in preferred stock and $30 million in new credit facilities provided by Cathay Bank, will help fast-track its expansion plans in North Carolina. In Marshall, the company hopes to grow from 50 employees when the headquarters opens to close to 500 in 2023, says CEO Simone Moraney. Though the firm isn't moving its headquarters until June or July, it's already seeing traction here and validation for its pick of the triangle. We already saw the difference between Raleigh and other locations, he says, noting that the number of resumes the company has received has grown dramatically. I monitor every week how many people we have interviewed for each position, and I can tell you we are happy with the decision to move to Raleigh. The latest fundraise will likely have a 2-year runway, Moraney says, noting it depends on how fast we grow. I don't think we'll need further equity now, he says. HZO develops protective nanocoatings aimed at safeguarding and waterproofing electronics, such as those developed by Motorola and Dell. And finally, from the banking tech page, under the heading of Economic Development, comes the article, Bill Would Remove EDPNC Funding Requirement. 3 months after a report found the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina has failed to meet expectations, a lawmaker has introduced a bill that could further empower the 5-year-old recruitment agency. EDPNC must now raise at least $1.25 million per year. The EDPNC Modifications Bill, filed by Representative Jason Sain, a Republican from Lincoln, would axe that requirement. The entity would still be allowed to raise funds, but wouldn't be required to do so under the bill. In January, the General Assembly's Program Evaluation Division recommended EDPNC increase its private funding to $2 million per year, which EDPNC rejected. EDPNC claimed that since 2015, it's helped the state win more than 500 corporate locations and expansions and 67,000 new jobs. In an email, Sain says the bill comes after multiple conversations with EDPNC CEO Chris Chung, who he believes is doing an incredible job. But let's not mince words here, he writes. Because of EDPNC's success, it also means they've drawn critics as well. I believe they, EDPNC, should be more empowered to continue their good works. I believe EDPNC shows what a true bipartisan effort for the good of our state can do and will do in the future. Next, we turn to the healthcare and education pages of the Triangle Business Journal, and under the heading of Bed Battle comes the article, Duke and UNC Compete Over Orange County Surgical Space. UNC Healthcare and Duke Health are going head-to-head again over another set of operating rooms in Orange County, continuing a series of battles throughout the triangle between healthcare giants. This month, both UNC Healthcare and Duke Health submitted Certificate of Need, those are CONs, applications to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, seeking to build operating rooms in Orange County. The 2019 State Medical Facilities Plan says up to three more operating rooms are needed in Orange County. The application from Duke proposes to build a $12 million ambulatory surgical center with up to two operating rooms and two procedure rooms. UNC's application proposes to build up to three operating rooms onto the existing UNC Chapel Hill campus for a total cost of $6.7 million. And under the heading of Booming comes the article, UNC Health Projects Total More Than a Million Square Feet. UNC Healthcare is expanding, and fast, as it plans to increase its already massive footprint by 15% in the next few years. UNC has broken ground in Chapel Hill on its most recent 150,000-square-foot East Town building, which will house specialty practices such as cardiology, pulmonary, endocrinology, and hematology, as well as providing a urology clinic, outpatient imaging, and laboratory. The building is the first phase of a massive 48-acre site where the system plans to expand, and less than 10% of the projects UNC has in the works. In 2019, its 100,000-square-foot medical office building at Panther Creek in western Wake County is scheduled for completion, as well as its 50,000-square-foot office building on Blue Ridge Road in Raleigh. In 2021, the 245,000-square-foot Holly Springs Hospital is slated for completion, as well as the 145,000-square-foot UNC Rex Cancer Center. In 2022, the 335,000-square-foot UNC Medical Surgical Tower and the 90,000-square-foot Hillsborough campus expansion are expected to be complete. The seven projects amount to 1.115 million square feet, a 15% increase in the system's footprint by 2022, with a cost of around $600 million. And earlier this year, the NC Department of Health and Human Services denied UNC's applications to build two ambulatory surgical centers in Wake County and add two surgical rooms to UNC Rex Hospital. The system is contesting its denial. UNC is also seeking surgical operating rooms in Orange County and to expand the surgical capacity on the UNC campus. Those projects are pouring millions into the construction economy. Contracts for the projects include the Holly Springs Hospital, that's with Brassfield and Gorey, the UNC Medical Surgical Tower with Skanska, Blue Ridge with Williams Realty and Building Company, Panther Creek with DPR Construction, and finally, the UNC Rex Cancer Center with Brassfield and Gorey. And in education news from the education and healthcare page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, under the heading of insurance, comes the article, Longtime Raleigh Firm Has New Name and Aims to Double Headcount. Raleigh-based Medical Mutual Insurance Company is changing its name as part of a rebranding effort that its CEO says could result in a number of new hires. Beginning April 23rd, the company, which has operated in the Triangle for the last 44 years, will be renamed Curie. CEO Dale Jenkins says the company is looking to advertise its line of services other than insurance. We've reached a point today where the things that we do, the resources that we provide, and also the aspirations that we have to do even more for physicians in the coming years, our name just doesn't reflect that, he says. Curie, Jenkins says, is a shortened version of curiosity, which he says reflects the restless and self-reflective attitude the company hopes to foster. It's a word that describes our company, and more importantly, I think, It describes our members, because physicians by nature are curious people, he says. They want to solve problems. They want to help patients get better. They want to find new therapies and ideas to make the lives of their patients better. Jenkins says the company wants to expand its other services, such as human resources, compliance consultation, and cybersecurity, with its existing physician clients. It also wants to expand a wealth management and retirement planning service. The company hopes to market those latter services to other investors as well, he adds. The company currently employs 200 company-wide, about 150 of which are located in the Triangle. The rest are in Pennsylvania. The company plans to hire 35 more in the coming months, and Jenkins says he wouldn't be surprised to see the company double in size by 2024. The company currently reports around $250 million in revenue. Much of the future growth would come from the wealth management services, Jenkins adds. And also from the education page under the heading of New Development comes the article, Duke Innovation Looks Promising for Cell Technology. Duke's breakthrough method for improving the accuracy of CRISPR technology by 50-fold is big news for the biomedical industry, especially for researchers looking to develop therapeutics requiring optimal accuracy. Biomedical engineers at Duke University are adding a tail to the guide RNA, that's ribonucleic acid, used to identify the targeted DNA sequence for editing. The tail falls back onto itself, the tail folds back onto itself, locking it in and forming a hairpin shape. CRISPR systems are an emerging gene editing technology where doctors can address human diseases by editing cells. The Duke researchers' hairpin method is unique in that it is based off the guide RNA. CRISPR is generally incredibly accurate, but there are examples that have shown off-target activity. So there's been broad interest across the field in increasing specificity, says Charles Gersbach, an associate professor of biomedical engineering at Duke. But the solutions proposed thus far cannot be easily translated between different CRISPR systems. Duren Kokak, the researcher who leads the study, says that innovation makes the technique especially important as more CRISPR editing techniques come onto the market because their technique should already be implementable. Next, we turn to the restaurants and retail page of this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of Beer Notes comes the article, Brewery to Release Old Tuffy Beer for Pack Fans. NC State University tailgating might become even more fun with the help of New Belgium Brewing Company. The brewery plans to release a new beer inspired by NC State called Old Tuffy, according to My Beer Buzz. The lager-style beer features the classic version of the PAX Strutting Wolf logo on 19.2-ounce cans, 12-ounce cans, and kegs. The beer comes in at 4.7% alcohol by volume, which may make it easier to drink on hot days in the parking lot. This lager marks the second time in the Colorado-based company's history that it has released a true-to-style lager. New Belgium also has a North Carolina presence with a facility in Asheville. And in other brewery news, Apex Brewery teams up with Dunkin' Donuts. Southern Peak Brewery of Apex is teaming with Dunkin' Donuts, and for a good cause. The brewery, starting April 27th, will unveil its special drink, an espresso-flavored kombucha. Southern Peak Brewery's release will only be sold at the brewery at 950 Windy Road. The brewery will donate $3 from each drink to the Western Wake Crisis Ministry. Southern Peak Brewery was founded in 2016 and has a 7-barrel brewery and taproom. And under the heading of added flavor comes the article, Chef Looks to Bring a Touch of Argentina to Raleigh Restaurant. Gonzo Tacos at Tequila's Mexican restaurant has 5 locations in the Triangle and a food truck and plans to open a new restaurant, Macondo, inside the Sojourn Glenwood Apartments later this year. The new restaurant will have an Argentinian theme. Gonzo's executive chef, Jose Garcia Campos, recently visited Argentina to get some tips. Below were some excerpts from Campos during a tequila and food pairing on April 23rd. So it's a Q&A format. What did you learn on your three-week visit to Argentina? I was working with a chef from Colombia who has a restaurant in Argentina. I went over there to work with him and learn a little bit more about South American food. I'm Puerto Rican, but my training is in French cuisine. I wanted to see how to incorporate all the ingredients from South America and not just Mexico. You introduced a small group of people to some of that food April 23rd. Will that be part of Macondo's menu? Yes. Everything we did was with the intention to do at Macondo. It's a work in progress. Some of the dishes will keep evolving. We have to think of the ingredients and the equipment that we don't have here and learn to adapt. Well, does food presentation differ in Argentina as compared to the U.S.? It's a mix of both. They do some really good pairings in Argentina, but they have their own style. And finally, will Macondo help with people's preconceived notions of Latin food? I hope so. When people say Latin food, the first thing they think is Mexican food, but the reality is there is so much more. Now we turn to the real estate page of this week's Triangle Business Journal and a couple of stories from that page. Under the heading of five stories comes the article, Developer Plans New Hotel Near Crabtree and Raleigh. A well-known Crabtree Valley Mall area property in Raleigh may soon see construction of a new hotel. A five-story, 130-room hotel could be coming to the property just off the Interstate 440 exit on Glenwood Avenue if a recently submitted site review is approved. Owner and developer RK Investors, through its Chapel Hill-based Carolina Hotel Investors Crabtree LLC, plans to construct a home-to-suite at 2102 Century Drive. Documents filed with the North Carolina Secretary of State's office list Manish Atma, Neil Kapadia, and Russell Ransom III as principals of Carolina Hotel Investors Crabtree. The new hotel would sit immediately east of another Hilton property, the 12-story, 176-room Doubletree by Hilton, Crabtree Valley. In contrast to the more traditional Doubletree Hotel, the Home2 brand aims to provide an affordable price point for both business and leisure travelers who are looking for extended stay accommodations, which include a room with an attached living area and kitchen. A preliminary subdivision plan application was approved for the same property last year with the generic name Century Drive Hotel rather than the Home2 brand. This hotel would be named Home2 Suites at Century Drive. The proposed building is 67,746 square feet with a one-level covered parking deck beside it. The John R. McAdams Company of Durham put the administrative site review together and is serving as the project's consultant. The parcel of land called Century Office Park consists of 4.5 acres and includes the Doubletree building. The latest land value exceeds $1.5 million. The Home2 Suites by Hilton brand has seen rapid growth since the first one opened in Fayetteville in 2015. About 300 of the hotels have now opened with more than 400 in the pipeline. All Home2 Suites are franchised. There are currently two Home2 Suites in the Triangle area, one at 1020 Lower Shiloh Way in Morrisville, and the other at 3305 Watkins Road in Durham. And finally, on the real estate page from this week, under the heading of Expansion Plans, established Raleigh Shopping Center Mall's new building. The shopping center that opened in Raleigh some 90-plus years ago is planning to add a two-story structure. Oak Park Shopping Center on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh has undergone many renovations and transformations since it was founded in 1933. If newly submitted site review plans are approved by the City of Raleigh, there will be yet another with the new building going up. Plans call for an 8,727-square-foot two-story building for retail and office space beside Fresh, a local ice cream shop off Oak Park Road. Looking from Glenwood Avenue, the building would appear behind the ice cream shop. The preliminary site review doesn't mention any possible businesses moving into the available space. a much larger single-story building on the property. That's 43,510 square feet. Houses Casa Carbone, Peddler Steakhouse Restaurants, Mouse Piano and Organ, and the Tilted Stage Costume Shop, among others. That building and Fresh will remain the same except for decorative additions for matching and consistency purposes. The building's parking lot area would be reconstructed with 8 shade trees planted in it. The city's UDO calls for a minimum of 5 shade trees for the 10,185 square foot lot. Plans are for 211 parking spaces. At least 194 are required by the city for the property. Next, we turn to the cover story for this week's Triangle Business Journal. And it's very unusual in the sense that rather than a cover story, it's actually presenting the 2019 CEO of the Year Awards. And there are 20 of them. Needless to say, it's going to be impossible to read all the prose about each of these 20 CEOs. So I'm going to read the synopsis for each of them that'll give you a flavor for who they are and what company they head. The first one is Andy Andrews from Dominion Realty Partners. Dominion Realty, of course, is headquartered in Raleigh. It's a real estate company, as you might imagine. It's a full-service real estate organization providing development, management, leasing, acquisition, and investment services. It was founded in 2005 and currently has 38 employees. 2018 revenue was $9.5 million. So what was Andrew's first paying job? A professional tennis player. And when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His response, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Our next CEO is Ed Auslander from the Lord Corporation. Lord Corporation is headquartered in Cary. It's a diversified technology industry, and it's described as developing adhesives, coatings, motion management devices. It was actually founded in 1924 and has currently 3,100 employees. So what was his first paying job? I delivered newspapers when I was about 10 years old. And when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Lord Corporation's founding fathers, Hugh Lord, Tom Lord, and Don Alstadt. Our next CEO is Michael Chasen with Precision Hawk. Precision Hawk is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's a drone-based technology and services industry. It's described, as a matter of fact, as a provider of drone technology. It was founded in 2010 and currently has 207 employees. When asked, what was your first paying job? His answer, working at a computer consulting company. And when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His reply, the Wright brothers and their sister, Catherine. Our next featured CEO is Adrienne Cole with the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce. Of course, the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce is headquartered in Raleigh and is described as a business organization. In fact, it's the Triangle's largest nonprofit business membership organization, made up of more than 2,300 members. Founded in 1888, it currently has 40 employees. Its 2018 revenue was $7.9 million. So what was Cole's first paying job? A horseback riding instructor. And when posed with the question, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? The answer, Jane Goodall, Madeline Albright, Queen Latifah, Bono, and Sting. Our next CEO is Dr. Patrick Conway with Blue Cross and Blue Shield, North Carolina. Blue Cross and Blue Shield, North Carolina, of course, is headquartered in Durham, and it's an insurance industry. It's a health insurance company in North Carolina, as a description. It was founded in 1933. Blue Cross Blue Shield, North Carolina, currently has 4,800 employees, and its 2018 revenue was $10 billion. What was his first paying job? A construction worker. So, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Answer, Jeff Bezos and Frank Holding. Our next CEO is Scott Crawford of Crawford & Son. Headquartered in Raleigh, It's, of course, described as a restaurant. In fact, a restaurant and hospitality company specializing in creative concepts. The company was founded in 2016 and currently has 22 employees. 2018 revenue, $2 million. So what was his first paying job? Working on a dairy farm in rural Pennsylvania. Who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? My business partner and investors. Our next CEO is Tom Dundon from the Carolina Hurricanes. Of course, the Hurricanes is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's a professional sports team, specifically a professional hockey team. And the company was founded, actually, in 1972 as the New England Whalers. Next in the CEO is Cindy Eckert from the Pink Ceiling. The Pink Ceiling is an investment and mentoring company. It's an investment firm meets incubator for health tech startups by or for women. This company was founded in 2016, rather, and has currently 17 employees. So what was her first paying job? Does making my brothers pay me to deliver food from the refrigerator to the couch count? And when posed with the question, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Walt Disney. I'd love to witness that level of imagination. Our next CEO is J. Allen Fine with Investors Title Insurance Company. Headquartered in Chapel Hill, obviously it's an insurance company. It's described as engaged in the business of issuing and underwriting title insurance policies. The company was founded in 1972, currently has 415 employees. Its 2018 revenue, $156.3 million. So what was his first paying job? The school bus driver. And when posed with the question, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, John Allison, president and CEO of the Cato Institute. Our next CEO is Tom Greco with Advance Auto Parts. Advance Auto Parts, of course, is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's described as an automotive aftermarket parts provider in North America that serves both professional installer and do-it-yourself customers. Advance Auto Parts was founded in 1932 and currently has approximately 70,000 employees. Its 2018 revenue, $9.6 billion. So what was his first paying job? Delivering flowers. Who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer? Tim Cook, CEO of Apple. Our next chosen CEO is Gary Green of Green Resources. Green Resources is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's a recruiting industry. In fact, it's described as a recruiting firm offering a wide range of talent solutions to connect people and companies. The company was founded in 2000 and currently has 85 employees. Its 2018 revenue is $85 million. So was his first paying job? He was a newspaper carrier delivering the ad pack. And when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Answer, the Green leadership team. I find I gained so much wisdom from them, and more quality time with them would be wonderful. Our next CEO of 2019 is Jim Hansen with PNC Bank. PNC Bank is headquartered in Pittsburgh, and it's a banking and financial services firm, in fact, a diversified financial services company. The company was founded in 1845 and currently has about 53,000 employees. The 2018 revenue, $17.1 billion. What was his first paying job? Refereeing soccer games in Winston-Salem at 12 years of age. And who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, my father. He died young due to illness, and I was only 22 at the time, so I never had a chance to interact with him from the standpoint of me being in the business world. And our next CEO is Laura Helms-Reese, with Roe. That's R-H-O. Roe is headquartered in Durham, and it's a life sciences industry. In fact, it's a full-service contract research organization. The company was founded in 1984. Currently has 379 employees. Its 2018 revenue was $85 million. Her first paying job? At a gift and gourmet store in University Mall in 1988. So when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Her answer? Boris Groysberg, a talent management professor at Harvard. He's both delightfully funny, and he challenges me to think differently. And our next CEO for 2019 is Zena Howard with Perkins Will. Perkins Will is headquartered in Durham, and it's an architecture and design firm. In fact, they're described as architects, interior designers, urban designers, landscape architects, consultants, and branded environment experts. The company was founded in 1935 and currently has 1,900 employees across 25 offices, and with 70 professionals in Durham and Charlotte. What was the 2018 revenue? $12.3 million in Triangle area revenue. So what was your first paying job? A volleyball referee. Well, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? I would like to discuss balancing artistic expression with social purpose over lunch with Langston Hughes. Our next CEO of the year is Brendan Morrissey with NetCertive. NetCertive is headquartered in Morrisville, and it's a marketing technology industry, and in fact, it's described as a digital marketing technology industry. It was founded in 2009. It currently features 162 employees. Its 2018 revenue was $74 million. So what was his first paying job? Washing dishes in a small town family restaurant at 14 years of age. So who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? I would have loved to sit down with Andy Grove over lunch. Sadly, he passed away a couple of years ago. Mark Benioff of Salesforce would be an awesome person to talk with today, as he fundamentally invented the model that we know today as SaaS. And our next CEO is Todd Olson of Pendo. Pendo is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's a technical industry, of course, a technology industry, and it's described as product cloud that provides user insight, user guidance, and user communication for digital product teams. The company was founded in 2013, currently has over 300 employees. 2018 revenue, $20.9 million. What was his first paying job? He was a software developer at MBNA. And when asked, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, Clayton Christensen. Our next CEO is Sam Ratto with Videri Chocolate Factory. Videri Chocolate Factory, of course, is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's food manufacturing. In fact, it's described as a bean-to-bar chocolate factory, retail, and coffee shop. Videri Chocolate Factory was founded in 2011, with current employees being 21. Its 2018 revenue, $1.3 million. So what was his first paying job? Answer, camera operator for local access TV and a school board weekly meeting. So he was posed the question, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, someone who's in need of a good meal and likes to laugh. Our next CEO from our roundup of 2019 CEOs is John Rufty with Rufty Homes. Headquartered in Raleigh, Rufty Homes is a full-service construction company providing turnkey design build throughout the Triangle. Rufty Homes was founded in 1988, currently has 22 employees. Its 2018 revenue, $30 million plus. What was his first paying job? The first home built in McGregor, West Cary. And when posed with the question, Who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, Steve Jobs, General Hugh Shelton, and Temple Sloan II. Our next 2019 CEO of the Year is Joyce Weiland with SoftPro. SoftPro is headquartered in Raleigh, and it's a real estate software development and consulting firm. In fact, it does real estate closing, title, and escrow software nationwide. The company was founded in 1984, currently has 495 employees. What was her first paying job? A car wash. Who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? Answer, Susan Wojcicki and Elon Musk. And finally, we come to the 20th of our 2019 CEOs of the Year, and that's Randy Woodson with North Carolina State University. NC State, of course, is headquartered in Raleigh and is part of the higher education industry. In fact, it's described as the largest university in North Carolina. NC State was founded in 1887 and currently has about 9,500 employees. The 2018 revenue, $1.6 billion. So what was his first paying job? Emptying ashtrays and picking up beer cans after poker night at the Fordyce Country Club. And when posed with the question, who would you most like to invite to a business lunch? His answer, Steve Jobs and Charles Darwin. Two separate lunches, not together. This week's executive profile is of Chris Kovacs. For Chris Kovacs, it started as an idea within Coastal Credit Union. Today, it's a standalone startup, Constellation, with $34.5 million in funding. 16 backers have funneled capital into the company, including 11 that, like Coastal, are natural person credit unions, serving retail customers, he says. The other five are credit union industry organizations. In the next year, Kovacs hopes to be preparing for large banking conversions, onboarding additional credit unions, and looking to grow both the number of services on our platform as well as the services used by the credit unions. For Kovacs, who began his career as a 17-year-old collector at Navy Federal Credit Union, it's a complete 180. My very first job was calling on folks who were past due on their Visa cards, he says, recalling his first such call was to a major general. Kovacs, not one to back down, took full advantage of the opportunity, learning about credit card systems deployment. But at least back then, he didn't intend to spend his career at a financial institution. Kovacs came from a family of police officers and planned to be one himself. He backed that up by going to college to study criminal justice, but his work at Navy Federal kept calling. Having continued at the institution while in college, Kovacs was 5 years in by the time he graduated. The stability presented an intriguing alternative to a badge. He could have stayed in that path forever, but September 11th derailed his motivation. Kovacs, who had always been a tinkerer with a technology bent, got a phone call from a boutique software development firm. After September the 11th, the government was throwing hordes of money at these companies. He got an offer and a sizable raise, but found himself burned out pretty quickly. For a while, he lived the contractor's life. You didn't know where your next contract was going to come from. He could work from anywhere, so he started looking outside the Washington, D.C. beltway. And Raleigh kept coming up on best places to live lists. In 2004, he moved to Raleigh to take what seemed like a quieter job, with Coastal as a senior developer. Soon, he was running development for the organization, doing systems integration work, and doing coding projects, eventually landing as chief information officer. It was there, while running operations in the firm's technology division, that the Constellation project presented itself. Kovacs and team wanted to make credit unions competitive. How could they compete on digital services with what the biggest banks were providing? The challenge was, we couldn't buy systems the way we had in the past, he says. We had to leverage cloud computing. We had to leverage new ways of doing business and redefining roles. So Kovacs and his team began coding to become the matchmaker between credit unions and digital services. The resulting platform connected the fintech providers themselves to the credit unions, who could then pick and choose what services to offer customers. Constellation was the go-between. We have producers creating content, he says. We secure it, distribute it, and adapt it and help the fintech sell it to the credit union. Credit unions pay subscription fees and, in return, can access a marketplace of pre-integrated services for their customers. On the other side, Constellation gets a percentage of the sales occurring between fintechs and credit unions. It's been expensive to get to this point. The developer's portal cost $2 million, he estimates. The firm burns about $2.5 million a year for core functions, and the firm has spent about one-third of its funding as it works to connect its investing credit unions to the technology. It's not as though we can just turn on 11 customers, he says. We have to have enough to keep in the tank, enough to keep us in development. But Kovacs says it's going to be worth it. The company has already begun testing its product, and expects to be cash flow positive in 2021. And that will continue to grow as we continue to add more credit unions, he says, pointing to a target market he estimates at $750 million. There's about 250 credit unions. We should be able to reach at least 30% of them. In our world, there's nothing that holds our scale back. Next, we turn to the viewpoint page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and the guest column this week is written by Andrew Broad. Broad's a senior research fellow in UNCG's Center for Business and Economic Research, and his article is entitled Treading Water, It's Worse Than I Thought. In recent years, I've been surprising people by telling them that employment in the Greensboro High Point metropolitan area is lower than before the Great Recession. In nearly 12 years, our population has grown, but on balance, we've lost jobs. The story in the Winston-Salem metro area is only slightly better. It took until late 2016 before it regained the jobs it lost in the recession, and its jobs picture, while better than Greensboro's, still lags the state's powerhouse regions of Charlotte and the Triangle. But when I looked at regional employment data recently, I discovered something I should have known, but somehow did not. The Triad's employment lethargy has gone on for longer than I realized. Let's review the numbers. In March of this year, there were 359,900 jobs in the Greensboro High Point metro area, all figures seasonally adjusted. The previous peak was 372,000 in May 2007. So we're still about 12,000 jobs short of getting back to zero. But which zero? As the data show, the peak level of May 2007 wasn't even as high as the previous peak, which occurred right before the 2001 recession. In July of 2000, regional employment reached its all-time high of 374,200 jobs. If I were looking at this data in 2007, I could have said that Greensboro High Point employment had not yet regained the jobs lost in the 2001 recession, or currently, that we have yet to regain all the net jobs lost since the beginning of the millennium. In the 1998 to 2019 period, employment has grown 20% nationally and 21% in North Carolina. The Raleigh-Cary metro area has seen jobs growth of 56% as compared to 41% in the Charlotte region and 27% in Durham-Chapel Hill. The Winston-Salem metro area's growth in this period has been paltry, but at 7% at least its growth. And the population of the Greensboro High Point metro area has increased 20% since 2000. The data depicts a regional economy in long-term stagnation and possibly a slow decline. Our recent employment peaks are trending downward, with the 2007 peak lower than the 2000 peak, and current plateau lower than the 2007 peak. So what's going on? The Triad's still suffering through a long-term adjustment to the decline of manufacturing employment, which has dropped 34% locally since 98, and the rise of the knowledge economy. Education matters for the latter, but while educational attainment in the Triad has risen since 1998, it's risen faster elsewhere, including Charlotte and Raleigh. We appear not to have the workforce we need to compete with other metro areas. Not all is gloom and doom in the Triad. There are examples of dynamic innovation and growth. And if things were so terrible here, it would be surprising to see any population growth. But on the whole, we appear to be treading water, and we've been doing it for some time. And this week's editor's notebook is entitled Hurricanes and Woods Reflect Hard Work's Ultimate Payout. What is it that makes all of us feel good when we see an underdog fight above his or her weight class and win? Is it the memories of how we felt when things were at their prime? Is it the yearning inside of us that makes us want to believe good things still can happen? Or is it the recognition that hard work always has a payoff on the other side? I'm going with the third option, although the first two are partially true. In the space of 2 weeks, two improbable things happened in sports. Tiger Woods won his 15th major by winning the Masters Tournament in Augusta in a dramatic fashion. And closer to home, our Carolina Hurricanes won a Game 7 first-round playoff match against the defending champion Washington Capitals on their turf. Many would argue these events do not meet the threshold of being improbable. In sports, anything can happen. That's why you play the game. But in both cases, there was a method to the madness. In Woods' case, other than his longtime worshippers such as PGA Golf Tour buddies Pat Perez, Nota Begay, Charles Howell III, and a few others, there were a few people who believed he could come back and be relevant on the tour. That includes yours truly, although I never lost hope and tried to watch every shot he played all those years. But Woods knew that with hard work and proper conditioning, his mental strength and resolve would come back, and that it did. We saw it happen on a cloudy morning on a Sunday a couple of weeks ago. For the Canes, the process was chaotic. A new owner from Dallas comes in with tons of money, buys the team, starts cleaning house, primarily in the front office. Tom Dundon wanted excitement. So the scouts and Don Waddell, the president and general manager, found players who were young, fast, and fearless. And they cloaked those young minds with experience. Coach Rod Brindamore and Captain Justin Williams. Of course, the job's far from done for both Woods and the Canes. But the legendary golfer and the hockey team know the formula to get to the top. Work harder than others and believe in yourselves, regardless of public opinion. In golf and hockey, and in life, there are no gimmies. A gifted individual and a resilient team just prove that. Maybe that's what makes us feel so good about them and gives us hope. Go, Tiger, and let's go, Canes. And this week's Business Pulse question, how often do you send handwritten business communications, had 547 respondents. And the answers, 38% said, it's been so long I don't remember. 22% said, within the past month. 17% said, at some point earlier this year. 14% said, earlier this week. 10% said, I did it today. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be certain to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long till next time. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Once again, that's 919-832-5138.